Well, I just said I did no research for this, and I have 15 pages of notes here. And the joy of that is the joy of having done this for so long that I was able to look back and see I had given a talk on joy 10 years ago. And so I had an abundance of quotes, and don't you know, I can't seem to find the one I'm most looking for this morning. That's why I keep going through all these pages. There is somewhere in here, oh, I just saw it. Somewhere in here a quote from Hildegard of Bingen, who was a 12th century mystic. She said she counseled her spiritual directees to be juicy people. People who are so filled with wonder and curiosity, with lusty appetites and high spirits, that they embrace life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness with a burly, grinning bear hug.
That was Hildegard?
Yeah, something like that. Well, I guess she started with the juicy people. Somebody probably else wrote embracing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But so then in the book Daybreak Within, Rich Heffern, who probably wrote that other stuff other than juicy people, it said, to be juicy is to be a fearlessly joyous optimist, a troublemaker, tirelessly afflicting the comfortable, a passionate lover of good talk and tasty food, an anonymous prophet hovering over the cosmological riddle, a frequent violator of the ordinance against indecent exposure of the heart. And a gorilla in the insurrection against dream molesters everywhere. So, being juicy people. Joy is about being juicy people. And how much fun it is to be when we tap into that life force that is the juice within us. We are God expressing that divine life, that divine energy, that joy, that power, that peace, that grace that is the truth of God exists in all of us all the time. And these qualities of God are all connected to each other. So joy is a feeling. We enjoy things and we rejoice in things. But truly, joy is a state of being that is the ground of our being, the core of our being, the ultimate truth of our being. And as we begin to express an empowered way who we truly are, we feel joy more often. We begin to break through into the sunny side of life, the joy side of life. And we can cast a cloud over the sunshine. We can cast a shadow on the garden that we live in, but we live in joy. That's the truth of who we are. And so to find that joy breaking through more often, you know, when the clouds part, you know, that feeling when the clouds part and the sun comes out, and there's this sudden feeling of upliftment. Well, that's what it feels like when joy breaks through in our lives. And it can happen in so many different ways. But I was driving home last night, and I had been to a concert at George Mason University with a dance troupe that was fascinating and totally unique. Three of the four dances were without music. And that was a very surreal experience for me. And I decided I prefer the music kind. But it was an experience to see something totally unexpected and different. And there is a joy in the unexpected, in the spontaneous, in the things that we anticipate, and then we discover that it isn't like that at all, but there's something of value for us in what happened. And I always tell everybody all the time, I say it almost every day of my life, even when it looks like something's going wrong, it's actually something in the process of going right from a broader perspective. And joy is expanding our vision to that broader perspective and allowing us to see the bigger picture. So driving home last night, I was talking to the beloved in my head, as I do, and I said, okay, B, what's joy? And they said, joy is what you feel when you catch a glimpse of the true glory of this universe. Mm-hmm. Joy is what you feel when you catch a glimpse of the true glory of this universe. And I relate powerfully to what I would call mystical joy, the joy of conscious connection to Source, because I've been cultivating that for 25 years. And it is a strong, powerful draw in my life. And so I think about the divine every day. I read things about it. I explore it. I meditate. I experience it. But there is so much more to joy than just that. And so I said, okay, tell me more. They said, you feel joy when you expand your awareness of the omnipresence of love. Mm. And I thought, well, that's not quite as accessible as catching a glimpse of the true glory of the universe. So I needed to think about that one. You feel joy when you are expanding your awareness of the omnipresence of love. And here I am sitting in my car trying to write this down at the stoplight. So I won't forget it, and the stoplights kept being green on Fairfax County Parkway, and I was getting so frustrated that I picked up my cell phone and I called my answering machine at home and I told myself the lines so that I could write them down when I got home. So joy is having the technology to support what you need in the moment. That was a powerful relief to me when I got it down in a way that I knew I wouldn't lose it. So how you feel joy, how do you feel joy, and how does this relate to expanding the awareness of the omnipresence of love? And so after they said that, I said to them, Bea, I talked about the omnipresence of love last time. And they said, you are going to talk about the omnipresence of love every day for the rest of your life. I said, okay, well, I guess that's my mission statement. It's my job to bring awareness to the omnipresence of love to the earth every day for the rest of my life in some way. And I'm up for it. I believe that is what I really want to do. I want to tell people how deeply, dearly we are loved by Source, and I want to bring more love to the planet, and that's certainly one of the ways that I do that. So joy is partly feeling on track. You know, when you know what your mission is, you feel joy. And sometimes we take a really microscopic view of life, you know, and I remember for the first 35 years of my life I was trying to survive. And I didn't have a concept really of thriving or being happy. And I remembered that year I went to a psychologist and he said to me, you have a right to be happy. And I said, no, I don't. I said, if you told me I had a responsibility to be happy, I might respond to it more fully. I didn't know how to be happy. I was chronically depressed. And when I went to my first Science of Mind based group, it was such a homecoming for me because they gave me an understanding of the value of my life, that my life was spirit, that my life was Source, that I was more than this miserable person that was sitting on the sofa most of the time because I was so depressed. I was more than that. And that could come out of me in a more powerful way. And so Science of Mind gave me permission to explore happiness more fully. Also resulted in my divorce at that time, but it was empowering for me. And so that experience of moving forward, of feeling more joy, of recognizing joy, and I remember during that period, right before that, I was in Colorado. I had moved to Colorado. I didn't know a soul yet, and it was Thanksgiving Day, and my husband had taken the car, which was the only car we had. He'd been angry and gone off in the morning on Thanksgiving, And I was sitting in the house. I had nothing to eat except leftover Chinese food. But I was grateful for the leftover Chinese food a little bit. But before I had dinner, I was standing in the doorway looking out at a glorious view of Pike's Peak with snow on the top of it. And there were little prairie dogs running around on the hillside out back. And I thought, what do I have to be grateful for? And I couldn't remember anything that I had to be grateful for. I didn't have a single idea. I was sad that I wasn't with my family for Thanksgiving. I was sad that my husband had left me, and I didn't know when or if he'd be back. I was so miserable that I wasn't aware that I was living in a beautiful house, that I had a good job, that I had money in the bank, that I was 35 years old and 33 years old and healthy and beautiful. I didn't see who I was. My vision was so narrow that I couldn't see the truth of who I was and where I was and how much I had, the value of what I had. And the experience of learning to be grateful, to learning to appreciate what I had rather than focus so powerfully on what I didn't have, was for me the spiritual opening of studying Science of Mind in Abraham. I was a tough nut to crack. You know, I was one of those who was so focused on the negative that I was just going down and down and down. And I would get up and go to work and function beautifully at work because that was the role I had to play. That was a responsibility I had. But then I would go home and I would sit on the sofa and just be morose. You know, and one day my husband said, "How can you love a lump?" I mean, I was just nothing. And he couldn't love me, and then I felt bad because he couldn't love me. It just kept getting worse and worse, and then I shifted. And I found that somebody telling me I had the right to be happy really made a difference in my life. And so that was the door opening to joy for me. And it's been opening endlessly ever since, as I've become more and more aware of the presence of God and the presence of love, the omnipresence of love. In every moment, there is always something. And for years and years, I've quoted my friend Margie, who says, "Life is in the details, and there's something in every scene that sparkles." And that sparkle is that divine light. Whether you see it in sunlight on water, or you see it in the eyes of a baby or someone you love, when you see the light, when you appreciate color, when you look at the flowers, when you notice the change of season, when you connect with nature, when you connect with another human being, no matter who it is, you are seeing that light, that love that is spirit within them. And you may not be conscious in that moment that you are seeing the omnipresence of love. But in that moment, your heart is open enough to appreciate something. You are connecting with that divine love in a more powerful way than usual. So you can open to laughter and to joy and to celebration and to playfulness. That becomes a possibility on your chart. Originally, it wasn't a possibility for me. I didn't know how to do that. And I didn't really think that it was okay for me to do that. I was supposed to work hard. I was supposed to be a good girl. I was supposed to do what people told me. And at one time when I was talking to the Beloved, they said, "You accepted all the rules. You accepted your mother's rules. You accepted your teacher's rules. You accepted your professor's rules. You accepted your employer's rules. And by the time you got to accepting your husband's rules, you just were too fed up with rules." And ultimately, you had to break out of that experience and start again and decide for yourself, what are the rules for me? What am I going to do? What are the rules for me? So the rule for me now that I live by comes from Abraham Hicks. And they said, "You live in a state of grace. You forget that when you feel good, only good things can come to you. It's just a matter of relaxing and things will come." You are an essence bringing heaven to earth. Relaxing, chilling out, becoming more comfortable where you are, and allowing yourself to see the good in everything that you see allows you to more frequently catch a glimpse of the true joy and glory of the universe. We are moving into a higher frequency when we feel good. That's what feeling good means. Feeling good is emotional guidance from our inner self. It's our divine self saying, yes, you're moving closer and closer to what you want. You're living your mission. You are valuable. You are worthy. You are graceful. You are beautiful. A friend of mine told me a story recently about how she did a meditation, and she allowed herself to go to a quiet space within her. And she was inspired by it, by the fact that she lives in a one-bedroom apartment and her parents came to visit for 4 months. Not an easy situation to be in, to be working at a very rigorous technical job every day and to be sleeping on the couch and dealing with her parents. And she said, I couldn't meditate. I didn't have a space to meditate in, and it was making me crazy. And I was looking around outside. I was hoping the weather would be good enough. And in that feeling extreme situation, she turned within. And within her, she found what she called the sanctuary garden. A beautiful garden that was walled with green. And she was sitting in a swing, and ahead of her was a waterfall with a rainbow. And before her appeared this glorious woman in a beautiful white dress. She said it was the most beautiful dress she'd ever seen. And she said to her, "Who are you?" And the woman said, "I am you." And she said, "I had never seen myself as beautiful." And it was such a powerful revelation to realize that that within her, when she went within, she could see the beauty of who she was. And she could feel that sanctuary. She could feel that calm quiet, that letting go of suffering, that coming into a place of peace and ease. It's so powerful to recognize that the joy, as much as we connect with it in many ways on the outside, the joy has to be within us before we can see it out there. So we don't catch a glimpse of the joy when we aren't intrinsically in joy within us, at least a little bit. And I watched the Abraham Live workshop yesterday from Houston, Texas. They're doing broadcasts on the internet now, so you can tap into ongoing Abraham workshops once a month on the internet on a website. It's really awesome. And so something they said yesterday was important. I got off on the logistics here.
The joy within.
Thank you. Sure, it was important, but I will come back to it because I can't remember. Joy is giving yourself permission to make mistakes and knowing that you're loved anyway. And I remember reading in something that said, you are admired for your strengths, but you're loved for your flaws. So I'm taking comfort in that and trusting that I'm still loved even when I lose my place. One of the things that I remembered when I was thinking about joy was something Maya Angelou said on an Oprah interview on Masterclass. And she said, every time I get up to speak or to translate, to give a keynote address, to teach a class, she said, I gather in my mind every person who's ever been kind to me, and I ask them to come with me to speak. every person who's ever been kind to me. She said, many of them are dead, but they are all there with me, so I never go forward alone. And I thought that was a really powerful way of saying we are never alone. Because for me, when I think of we are never alone, I think of the divine spirit that's within me that I feel and can talk to. But I think for some people, it might be easier to relate to everyone that's ever been kind to me. And I began thinking this morning when I remembered Maya's statement, who was kind to me in my life? And I went through various periods of my life, kind to me as a child, kind to me as a teenager, kind to me as an employee or a 20-something or a 30-something or a 40-something or a 50-something, kind to me in my life. And the more people I thought of who were kind to me in my life, the more people I could think of. Because when you focus on an idea for more than 17 seconds, law of attraction kicks in and brings you more ideas like that. So as you riff on kindness, you can access more kindness. If you riff on joy, you can access more joy. If you riff on playfulness, you can access more playfulness. Whatever it is that feels like that entryway into the glimpses of the glory, you can take that works for you, whatever it is that works for you. And I brought this book, Super Joy, by Paul Pearsall, which has lots and lots and lots of suggestions about how to be more joyful in your life. And it comes from a psychological rather than a spiritual perspective. So I've already introduced you to my feelings about mystical joy. And he talks about a lot more grounded things. And so let me point out some of the things he suggested as access points to joy. The first one was joy of being. And he said we can learn that so easily from babies. I was thinking about Catherine and Petey. Grandchildren are an incredible access to joy for a lot of my friends now. And children are amazing. You know, I was walking by the park the other day, and there was a mom there swinging her little girl on the swing. And her little girl was tiny. And in that swing that had all the parts to it, so she was surrounded in the swing, not sitting on an open swing. And the mom was pushing the swing from behind, and every time she pushed the swing, the little girl went back, and when she came back, her mom said, high five, and this little hand came up and high-fived her, and then she swung back and high-fived again, and she was pushing her on the swing by high-fiving her, and the little girl giggled every time she got high-fived, and she managed to connect with her mother's hand. And I thought, how brilliant that is. You know, she's learning coordination. She's delighting in her life. And for right now, you know, it's just awesome to be alive. And just encountering that giggle made it awesome for me to be alive. I was just so grateful for being in that now moment, connecting with that baby. And I had just seen a YouTube video on a baby that was receiving bubbles. And there's a dog chasing down the bubbles. You've obviously seen it. Yeah. And every time the wand goes out and the bubbles come out, the little girl just goes bananas. And she's giggling and the dog's trying to catch the bubbles and the dog's tail's wagging. And the two of them together are just so funny. And we have access to that on the internet. You know, you don't have to have a live baby. There's a gazillion babies on YouTube now. Technology is amazing. You know, we have access to so much. Mary Mannion Morrissey said, start living now. Stop saving the good china for that special occasion. I had originally planned to do this talk the day that Zoe Mulford was here, and she has a song about don't save the china for a good occasion, so that would have been synchronistic. But Mary went on to say, stop withholding your love until that special person materializes. Every day you are alive is a special occasion. Every minute, every breath is a gift from God. So in this now moment, take a breath. And just recognize that being here now, in this place, with these people, with that capacity to breathe, is a gift from God. I tell you, you know, asthma has given me appreciation for breathing. I never feel more appreciation for breathing than when I have a moment when I can't. And that experience, you know, the tough moments in life give us the appreciation that we have for the beautiful moments in life. And that contrast is a part of the experience. You know, it's unlikely we're ever going to be without things we would say, this thing is going wrong. There's always going to be something that gets in the way for a moment. But that something births a new desire. That something gives us a grand opportunity to grow. And as we allow that growth that takes place automatically when we chill out, that will become less and less important and ultimately a source of joy, because we can look back. In our change class right now, we're looking back at things that have happened and seeing what we learned from them. And even the most painful things in my life, I can see how they pushed me forward. I can see how they made me who I am today. And who I am today is a joy to me. So all of that contributed to the willingness to be joyful. Marcus Aurelius, we went from the contemporary to a long time ago, said, when you arise in the morning, think of what a precious privilege it is to be alive, to breathe, to think, to enjoy, and to love. I don't have a watch on, so could somebody give me a time check?
It's about
3 of. Oh my goodness, we're almost done. Okay, let me give you the quick version. Oh wow, I didn't realize I was...
Keep going.
You're good? Okay. All right, I'll keep going. The second is the joy of being physical. In the book, they talk about burping and other physical phenomenon you can imagine. They talk about singing and clapping. We got to sing along with TM and Felicia. I'm sorry, I've been talking to Felicia lately and it's making me stumble a little. We got to sing. It's so good to sing. It's so good to dance and to move and to walk. You know, 4 months in a wheelchair made me really appreciate walking. Sometimes I have to go the hard route before I can appreciate. Maybe you appreciate walking already, and that's a great thing. So that's the second one, the joy of being physical. And Joseph Campbell said about that, I think what we are seeking is an experience of being alive, so that our life experiences on the purely physical plane will have resonances with our own innermost being and reality, so that we can actually feel the rapture of being alive. The third one they mention is caretaker joy. If you think about your mom, a friend, or a doctor, or someone else who cared for you sometime when you were sick or injured, it's a joy for someone to be cared for. It is also a joy to be the caretaker, to raise a child, to help a friend. And I was thinking when Gail called me about doing this talk that it's a joy to have a friend call for help, mm-hmm. and it's a joy to be a friend and be of help. So there is so much reciprocal joy when we are able to connect and share with each other. So thank you for this opportunity for joy, Gail. There's interpersonal joy. Babies develop this when they begin to connect with other members of their families, older siblings, aunts, adults, and grandparents. the baby giggling with the bubbles and the dog and her mom. So take a moment to remember someone that you know who makes you smile, someone you connect with and feel easy with, who uplifts you. Peer joy, the fifth one, is about the opportunity to play and laugh with friends. When you play, you enjoy life more. You laugh more. You feel freer. And you can play at a gazillion things. You know, we have lots and lots of different ways to express our playfulness. I've really gotten into playing games in the last couple of years, and I keep discovering more games that I like even better than the games I had before. And so my joy in the games of life has increased. But I also have this concept of the games connected people play together. And I think that when I was depressed, being around other people didn't uplift me much because I attracted other depressed, upset, fearful people. But when I started getting happy, I started attracting happier people. I started spending time with playful friends and going to concerts with Carrie, who goes into bliss with music and dance at the drop of a hat. And I say Carrie has a contagious bliss field. When I sit next to Carrie, I connect with that bliss that she feels. And I go to a better place. I go to a better place. Sometimes we can't do that. Sometimes the blissful person is sort of annoying. Have you noticed that? You know, when we're in a rotten place, a blissful person can be difficult. And I have an example of that. One night I went to a concert at Wolf Trap with Carrie. And I had an argument with somebody that day. I can't remember who we were seeing. The concert made no impression on me at all because I was arguing in my head with that person the whole night.
I remember. Yeah.
And Carrie was bouncing up and down, and she was screaming and carrying on, and I was looking at her saying, I wish I were there, but I'm not. And so sometimes we can't get the peer joy quite so well, but... most of the time, I'm a match to Carrie's Blissfield. Object joy. Object joy is about toys and art and music, things that are out there that bring us joy. And I got a new car last fall, and Fiesta Gracie brings me joy. She has so many high-tech toys, and she's bright yellow, and she made my neighbor say, "Hey, sunshine car lady." I love being known as the sunshine car lady. That's a joy for me. And when I leave Gracie in the evening, I always say goodnight, Gracie, and she says goodnight, Gracie. And we laugh, and I just betrayed my age, and so did all of you. So. that's object joy. Some of us play with computers. Some of us delight in new laptops or cell phones. Some of us play with homes and enjoy shopping for new furniture. Some of us love clothes or tools. We all have some aspect of life, or shoes, yes, that brings us joy. And so allowing ourselves to experience that joy, whatever the object joy is in our life, is a wonderful thing. Self-joy is about personal accomplishment. Being proud of yourself for doing something effectively, being productive, or conquering a big challenge always makes us feel that sense of satisfaction that is a type of joy. From joy springs all creation. Be joy as it is sustained. Toward joy it proceeds, and to joy it returns. That's from the Upanishads. Self-joy is about creativity. When we allow our skills and abilities to be expressed in the world, we feel good about ourselves. I worked briefly at a foundation that looked into human aptitudes, and they had described 35 different kinds of aptitudes of humans. And they said, if you don't use your aptitudes, you get frustrated. You were born with the need to express that gift, whatever it is, and to spread it around. Mm. And a lot of times in school, we seem to learn that if it isn't hard, it isn't worthwhile. And people gravitate to things that are difficult for them because they want to overcome them. And this group, this foundation, was designed to lead people toward the things that were easy, because those were the things that were going to give them the most satisfaction in their lives. Those were the places that they had the opportunity to most easily express their joy. I didn't grow up thinking life was supposed to be easy. I thought life was about hard work. So I always, you know, tried to excel at everything, whether I was good at it or not. And I frustrated myself trying to learn a lot of things that I couldn't learn easily. And when I focus on something that I learn easily, I feel so good about myself. I feel like, wow, look at how smart I am, how clever I am, how creative I am. And that's self-joy. It's noticing the things about yourself that work. Abraham Hicks said, creation isn't forcing or commanding something into existence. It's more of a rolling over, a good stretch, blissing out, lying on the grass, watching the flowers blowing in the breeze or the clouds floating by. Mm. Creation is about chilling out. Julia Roberts said, I didn't intend to become an actress. If you asked me what I wanted to be, my first answer would be 6 feet tall. My second was to be a veterinarian. And if I'd had a third answer, it was to be joyous and radiate it outward. Mm. The seventh is matching joy. We begin to match joy when we can be delighted for the well-being and joy of another. For me, I experience this a lot in my weekly circles of friends. I love watching them get a new relationship or a job or a house or whatever it is that is bringing them joy. And then I see it manifest and I see them finding all of the things about it that they just delight in. So, it's easy to match the joy of someone who's sparkling with the experience of something new in their lives. And that's matching joy is thrilling to someone else's joy. And as I said before, you have to be joyful in order to match somebody else's joy. Measured joy. Often at times during our growth period, we were taught just how much joy is too much. In my house, the line was, stop that rough housing now, someone's going to get hurt. And so I usually did. So if you have those measured joy messages in your head, you need to replace them with other thoughts and other ideas. Like, what if the universe rejoices in my joy? What if experiencing and expanding joy is my purpose for being here at all? What if following my joy means I'm on the right track? As Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. That's what we're here to do. Follow your bliss. Dispositional joy. That's nine, I think, if I didn't count wrong. When joy becomes integrated into all areas of your life, joy becomes your disposition, your way of being. And Frederick Farber said, there are souls in the world which have the gift of finding joy everywhere and of leaving it behind them when they go. And something my friend Vitai Bergman said after Kate's funeral strikes me as being related to this, because he said when he heard that Kate had made her transition, he said to his wife, "Oh, one of the lights of the world has gone out." And after he went to the memorial service that you so lovingly created, Ed, he said, "I went home and I said to my wife, the light didn't go out because I just saw the sparkle that she moved from person to person to person to person as she got up and spoke about, as they got up and spoke about what they learned from her, how they grew from her, how she touched them." So we have this opportunity to share the joy of our being, to love our lives, to be in joy, and to give that gift to others. And you can't give joy if you don't have it. So finding your own path to it, whatever is the easiest for you. And that's what the Beloved endlessly tells me. I said, you know, "I'm having trouble loving everyone, B." And they said, "Then love someone easy." It's our job to love everyone, and we do it magnificently. You take this moment to love someone in your present life. Open your heart to someone. That's all you have to do. And the more you do that, the better the lover you become, and the easier it is to love more of those people. So we become better at loving when we see from a broader perspective, when we connect with the glory that is the truth of the universe, when we see the love in ourselves and others, when we're playful and when we laugh, and when we feel willing to be present even when we make a mistake. Joy is not about being perfect. Joy is about being real and present and powerful and centered in the truth of who we are. And so it is.
So it is.
Thank you.